caught a glimpse. How the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Change it.
Turn and face the strain.
Change it.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
Welcome back to Geeks at College. I am your host, Taylor, and this week I am joined by Casey.
And
Chris.
Wow, another week. This is new.
Yeah, I know, right? It's almost like we're on, like, another site that's, like, cool and stuff.
And it takes us into doing an episode a week.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God they're paying us in Barnes & Noble gift cards.
Silly, they're Borders gift cards.
Oh.
God.
Oh.
Oh, no. Fuck.
That explains why everybody in the Barnes & Noble was laughing at me.
There's
no Barnes & Noble near me. I had to go 12 hours to get to the nearest one, and they just laughed at me.
That explains why I almost got kicked out of Barnes & Noble.
I just went to where they used to have the Borders by me, and then I cried.
And then you burned it down for insurance money.
Nope, it was already burned down by the previous owner.
Oh. The poor insurance money.
The bastard got there before me. I wanted to give it a Viking funeral, you know, heave up the entire building, put it on a barge, and set it on fire in Lake Erie, but...
You know, I tried for a couple of years to try to burn down a building for insurance money, but no one told me that I needed to be the person who had the insurance policy.
I know, right? That's a really important detail they didn't mention.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then suddenly, oh, it's Casey the arsonist. Well, guess what? We all make mistakes 9 or 10 times in a row in one night.
God, Dad, stop yelling at me.
Chicago Fire of 1906, yeah.
Turns out it wasn't a cow, it was Casey.
For insurance money. Turns out they didn't have insurance policies in 1906 either.
It was your like great grandfather, Shoeless Joe Gerard.
We came here from Ireland to avoid the famine.
We came here from Ireland, and then he like kicks his cow.
No, now we have to go out west.
Great
to
Jehoshaphat.
Now we have to go out west to Wyoming. Headcanon now. That's how the Gerards end up in Wyoming.
There was, like, 50 of you, and then it comes down to, like, 2.
Well, have you seen Casey, Wyoming? That place is tiny. You're probably not far off.
Yeah, it took him 100 years to, like, double the population to 4.
I wonder how many people I'm related to in Casey, Wyoming.
Oh my God.
Imagine if it was there an entire, like, cult of Gerards.
That worship Casey?
Well, dude, yeah. You know that, right? I'm named after a town my family settled.
I knew that.
What was that, Taylor?
I knew that.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, that'd be amazing if you're, like, a messiah to them.
Actually, Taylor, there was a really bad flood in Casey, Wyoming about 10 years ago, so I essentially sent them all the money in my piggy bank, which was a couple $100, and they sent me entire Casey, Wyoming tourist kit and a thank you letter from the local mayor at the time.
There's a mayor?
I didn't know either, but
it's the town founder. He's also the town founder.
He's the town founder, who's also named Jimmy Gerard.
Let's see, on Wikipedia it says that the total population as of 2010 is 263, estimated 2012 is 261. So two of them
were off.
Either two died or left.
Two of them wandered off and never came back.
Two of them went mysteriously to get some milk.
They were off to, like, on that show Lilyhammer.
Oh my God, yes.
Oh my God, you watch Lilyhammer?
No, I need to start. I really want to.
It's pretty good.
It sounds like my kind of thing.
It's not amazing, but it's pretty good. It's the American equivalent of Young Doctor, which was like, okay, you're not blowing my mind, but you're pretty fun.
Young Doctor, Taylor, what?
No, it's just called Young Doctor or something like that. But it stars John Hamm as a doctor looking back on his life and where he got started as a doctor in Moscow in the turn of the century 1900s.
Oh, yeah, and
And Young Hamm is Daniel Radcliffe. And there's times where you see old him and young him interacting, and that's disproportionately better than anything else in the show.
God, I'm trying to remember what channel that's on.
BBC, I think.
BBC?
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it's British.
A Young Doctor's Notebook.
Okay, Young Doctor's Notebook.
It's on Sky Arts. That's what it is.
Skarts. Okay, just one more thing on Casey Wyoming. I love how Wikipedia sums up the town. The town is home to 3 churches, 2 bars, 1 restaurant, 1 store, 1 museum, 1 K-12 school, and not a single stoplight.
Say not a single stoplight.
Not a single stoplight.
What the fucking shit?
Part of me really wants to edit and put at the very end, it's a death trap, it's a suicide trap, you gotta get out while you're young. Because traps like us, baby, we're born to run.
Like how there's a town next door to me, and it's about twice as big in terms of area, but I'm pretty sure it has, like, 5 freaking times the population, yes. It is, like, double the area, but it has 3,677 people. In literally a square mile, they crammed in 3,677 people.
Wow.
So I have no idea how the fuck people live in Casey, Wyoming when it's like half a mile. Half a square mile.
Hey, I'm looking at a sign. They have an X on there. Wikipedia is wrong. They also have a gas station.
Much of the population enjoys spending a week getting to know each other at the local Sonic. Just kidding. There's not Sonics there. Or any of Wyoming. But they go to their weekly trip to the cattle ranching museum.
No, they could go to Harold Girard Park.
Oh my god, what if they had one of those, like, cards that you hole punch when you go to the museum, but it's just for more trips to the museum? It's like you get 5, you take 5 trips, get a hole punch, and then you get half off your 6th trip.
Well, it says, come to Casey, Wyoming, go to the, what's it say, free historical sites and museums. So, I guess it's historical. There's Harold Girard Park, which is apparently a crummy rodeo that someone in my family made.
The black sheep of your family.
Harold Girard.
It's so weird to me to know I descend from cowboys.
Yippee-ki, oy vey!
Think about it. If I don't have kids, I'm the end of a line of Red Dead Redemption. My great-grandmother remembered the day Billy the Kid rode through town.
Well.
And I'm the byproduct of all that.
Well.
Legend of Korra.
Yeah.
Yes, we are going to talk about
something that isn't Casey, Wyoming, for fuck's sake.
You don't know. There could be some twist at the end. You don't know.
This is literally
Turns out all of Avatar is a prequel to the founding of the Girard family.
So yes, we are going to talk about what has so far happened in The Legend of Korra, Book 3, Change. Yes, 10 episodes.
A lot of change. So much change. Like, I found 5 quarters when I was watching that show.
I just listened to David Bowie's Changes on a loop, and it syncs up perfectly.
Yep.
Changes.
That's what happened.
Time makes a strange changes.
Anyway, we didn't really talk about season 2, did we?
We talked about it pretty much every week.
Did we?
We did.
Okay. But I guess just to fill in people that hadn't heard.
Remember, we were the ones who liked it, and the rest of the Western world didn't, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
I liked it. It was on my best of the year list.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the 3 of us.
It was a better season than people are giving credit for.
Well, because a lot of it is Avatar fans who, a lot of them can be fucking crazy. Like most fandoms, there's that group of them that is like, don't touch my baby, you know, or like these people that like, the first season, like, they were so burned by that, even though I'm willing to admit that season one had quite a bit of problems to it, but people act like they were, like that season shot their childhood pet.
Yep.
And then they won't forgive them for it.
Honestly, if season three pans out the way it's going to pan out, I'm just going to say I prefer Legend of Korra to Last Airbender. Not by a lot, but I do.
I wouldn't go that far, but I would definitely think that... I would think season two of Avatar Last Airbender is still fucking amazing, in my book, anyway.
Oh, I agree with that. I love that season. I love season one, and I really enjoy season three. But I could... What I just said there could also sum up Legend of Korra.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do still really like season one, even though I'm not a fan of the ending. I actually... I'm looking back really fondly on season two all these months later.
Yeah, this, like, 6 weeks later. And we'll get to that, but, yeah, I mean, I can't agree with you that I prefer this series to the first one, but I do think that Legend of Korra is unfairly put down. I think it's less consistent than, Avatar The Last Airbender. Like, you have much greater peaks and valleys in Korra. Like, when Korra's really good, it's really fucking good.
Mm.
But, like, you know, when it has its dips, they're kind of, like, head-scratching at times. So, I don't know.
Honestly, for me, it just gets down to personal taste. What do I prefer... Ancient Eastern cultures translated into children's television or turn of the century Industrial Revolution stuff. And I love Industrial Revolution stuff. It's almost combining Eastern culture with old timey Americana. And I kind of love that. I mean, can't wait for whatever next Avatar is and we get into the equivalent of the 1950s and they all have to go to these diners and they're wearing leather jackets and there's...
It's just fucking...
I don't know, man. Like, I kind of equate my first thoughts of Legend of Korra to how I viewed the transition from Fable 1 to Fable 2, where it's just like, you guys really kind of want to do this, like... super transitioning to modern period, and Legend of Korra, I thought, does it a lot better than Fable 2.
Well,
because there are a lot more, like, really great modernist themes. Like, you know, like, all these, like, the formation of modern government, you know, a development of technology, and it's not really just all about, like, oh, let's just have guns now.
Well, it works really well because it's
organic,
because
me.
Well, what I was going to say is in the first series, they do have a lot of, like, you can tell it's not just ancient world. The Industrial Revolution is right around the corner, and you can tell just looking at what the Fire Nation's developing, and even what the Earth Kingdom's been developing, they're really starting to, they are right on the verge of having a bunch of technological breakthroughs. It's almost as if the old world is dying for the new world at points. And then this is that 100 years later, and we have gotten to all of the technological breakthroughs that were hinted at were right around the corner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think a lot of it is really a lot of the modernism is mainly just in Republic City.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Republic City is just, like, the hub of everything. Like, it's so concentrated, and it's this city without leaning towards any of the nations, you know, there's not really too many benders in Republic City, right? Except for athletes for pro bending, right?
It's not like, it's not dependent on any type of bender, like, say, Ba Sing Se is dependent on earth benders, or...
Or Zhao Fu, as we've learned, is depend on metal bending.
Hmm. Yeah. So...
And
I agree, like, that's a really cool idea and a very cool direction to take the show. And I think it works, again, as Chris said, pretty organically. But as you were saying, Casey, I guess...
I think I got to the end of what I was saying there with... I was just saying, I like the way that they've included the almost old-timey Americana plus the turn of the century American Revolution kind of stuff, and kind of merge that with their old Eastern or Far East styles. And I like the hybrid there. I think that they found a great balance between the two, so it's not leaning too much on one or the other. It could use more homeless people with bindles, but then again, everything could use more homeless people with bindles.
And more cabbages, because who doesn't like a fresh cabbage?
Well, there's like, what, the Cabbage Co. or something?
Yeah,
like,
I love
that's what I loved. When they got their little nod, it wasn't a nod. It was like, man, there's a dynasty in those cabbages.
Yes. I think one thing that I do like about Korra is, like, they can kind of explore different, like kind of more serious themes than Last Airbender. I don't know, man.
I thought Last Airbender had some serious themes. Just,
well, yeah, but, like, there was kind
a lot
of,
more kids stuff because they were kids.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying, like, there's more stuff like kind of euphemisms for racism. This is through all three seasons. Terrorism, you know, yeah. Stuff like that. Like, that's a little darker.
I mean, heck, this most recent season has started to include anti-government messages.
Yeah, like anarchy. No,
like fucking total anarchy, which is just like, and it's coming from the source of anarchy himself, Mr. fucking Henry Rollins. So, and I'd like just discover that today. So I was just like, dude, Henry Rollins is really mad about the government. What a shocker.
God, gosh darn it, Henry Rollins. You and you're assassinating the Kennedys, and you're bringing the Beatles to America, and what else did Henry Rollins do?
Hiring Jack Ruby to fucking plunge the world out of chaos.
No, and inventing sliced bread.
Lee Harvey Oswald was trying to steal the Jack Ruby.
The ancient Jack Ruby of the company.
That's one of my favorite Homer Simpson lines ever. Lee Harvey Oswald wanted to steal the Jack Ruby.
Anyway.
Anywho.
So I guess, do we just want to sum up where we left off with Korra in season two, where she pretty much, it's a harmonic convergence, right? That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's cool about season two is that it kind of dives back into an aspect of the Avatar that we haven't really seen before, but was hinted at in Last Airbender, which was being one with spirits. And like, there was a couple episodes in Last Airbender that dealt with it, and you know, the Avatar state and whatnot. But we didn't really get a full understanding of what that meant. And then we learn that there's an entire spirit world. Like, we know that there's a spirit world, but we actually get to see it. And we understand, like, and then we learn the origin of the Avatar, which I think a lot of people would agree is probably the best part of that, of last season. The whole origin of the Avatar with Avatar Wan.
I thought that was
a strong point. In fact, any time they go back and tell the history of stuff, particularly, like, I think one of my favorite Last Airbender episodes was the Avatar and the Fire Lord.
Oh, yeah, with Roku and
Sozin, because it's just, like, it really illustrates that, like, these aren't, like, grand Machiavellian failures of humanity. There's just, like, it's, you know, really simple misunderstandings leading to entire world-altering events.
Mm-hmm. And so we learn that the pretty much the main villain scheme of season two is that Korra's uncle, who is like a spiritualist and one with spirits too, wants to possessed by, is it Vatu? Is the dark spirit?
Yeah.
Okay. Vatu, the spirit of darkness and evil, pretty much, who has been sealed away for, what, 10,000 years? I believe it was.
Yeah.
And, around there, yeah.
And be possessed by Vatu and become the Dark Avatar. And then giant kaiju-esque battle ensues and Korra wins. And decides not to close the portal between the spirit world and the human world. And thus, they more or less cross over, and the spirits are now in the human world. And that's where we leave off. And that's why season 3 is called Changes. And, anyone else want to take over?
Well, this season is dealing with a lot of the ramifications, especially in the first couple episodes. Like, for some reason, and I'm not sure if they brought this up in the end of season 2, but when the spirits came, so did a lot of vines and trees and plants start appearing everywhere, and they can't get rid of them. And there's apparently a bunch of spirits hang out with them, they inhabit them, and the thing I love about those episodes is it feels like a Miyazaki movie at points. Like, when they nearly hit one of the trees and a sand slash, for all intents and purposes, gets pissed off at them.
Well, that's a lot like, it's very reminiscent of the flashback episodes in season 2 with Avatar 1. Because those also feel very Miyazaki-esque. Mm. But go on.
And turns out that Korra is getting pretty unpopular with people because she's made people's lives more inconvenient. And the current government isn't really happy with her either. But then things start to change when suddenly people start airbending. There's airbenders all over the place. And and now that apparently the bridge between humanity and the spirit world has converged into just one unison, there's more airbenders again. And it's just like, oh my god, what's going on, what's going on? So she begins trying to round up the airbenders. But unfortunately, one of the people who has been given airbending capabilities is Zathu, is that his name?
No, it's Zaheer, who, as Chris mentioned, is voiced by Henry Rollins, who is our villain of this series.
Yeah, so Henry Rollins can airbend now, and he escapes from prison and finds his ragtag team of merry men. And one of them, and that chick who has no arms.
I know, like, his band of merry men and women is fucking awesome. Yeah.
They're a unique group. Fucking Gazan, the lava bender.
I want to see him form a heavy metal band.
Yeah, I would join that band. We'd do a lot of cocaine. And Ming Hua, the armless lady.
Yeah, who I didn't notice was armless until just recently.
Oh, really? You just thought she had, like, water arms?
Well, I thought, like, her arms were in the water.
Yeah.
Like, somehow. But then, like, in the newest episode, like, there's a scene where, Bolin and Mako have been captured by them, and they're just in a truck or something. And she's just sitting there without arms, and I'm like, oh, God, she's actually armless.
Yeah. She also drove the car with her water arms.
That's fucking awesome. I
like to think that she was out hiking one day and got her arm caught in a boulder, so she had to get rid of it. But then she went hiking again, and it happened a second time.
She had like, to freeze twice.
Yeah, like 2 feet away from where she was hiking the first time, another boulder fell.
It's the same pass.
it's the same boulder. She's like, yeah. You're not going to get me this time, and it falls in its ear.
Where's an earthbender when you need it? Can you imagine the 127 hours if the guy was an earthbender, it'd be called 127 seconds?
It'd be called 1.27 seconds.
127 milliseconds. Oops, boom.
Whoa, that was a close one.
Could have had a book and movie.
Hire what's his face to do an animation of that. We would be great writers. Who am I thinking of? Not Yukino Joe. Or am I thinking of Yukino Joe?
Are you thinking of Onien-G?
No.
Oh. But
who's
like
the guy that does all the awesome Gaiden and awesome series?
Oh, Ego Raptor.
Yeah, we should get Ego Raptor.
I just imagine, like, Casey was saying, he walks away. It's like, boy, man, can you imagine if I got trapped under there? I'd be there for, like, I don't know, 127 hours.
And then the title, 127
hours.
Boom. 1.27 milliseconds.
But I'm just imagining if, like, 127 hours, but it's, like, way more mundane things. Like, man, I have to go to the DMV 127 hours.
But man, Internet Explorer needs an update. 127.
Man, this tour's gonna take so long. 127 hours. And then it says
I need to set my alarm clock tomorrow.
How soon do you need to see me, officer? 127 hours. It's like a private to his sergeant. But
we also have Plea, who's the Combustion Man's daughter.
Is she the Combustion Man's daughter?
No, I'm looking it up just because I was like, I want to make sure, but she has that same eye thing.
Yeah, where she can create spontaneous combustions with her mind.
Dude, I'm reading fucking Combustion Man right now, and apparently in the trivia section, it's like, the Combustion Man bore resemblance to Marvel Comics' as Luke Cage.
Okay.
I'm like, dude, that is a stretch.
I will say one of the things I really like about this season is, one, I think Zaheer is actually a really interesting villain who, unlike the previous two seasons where, like, the villains have potential, but I don't think they show up as much as they should, especially with Amon, because, you know, Amon showed up for, like, Amon was great when he first showed up.
Yeah.
And then you don't see him for a while, and then it comes back. But
he was a great threat, which is what I liked.
He was a great threat, it's just like you kind of wanted more of him, but what I like about Zaheer and his gang is that they're in pretty much almost every episode.
And he's doing ballsy shit, like, every episode.
Yeah, and I love the fact that he's an airbender. Where it's like, we went from the previous series where the one airbender is the good guy, the main protagonist, and now
The other thing that they explain is that, like, airbenders, they have no capacity for evil.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing in them that could just, like, murder or torture or extort or even just, like, harass another one. Another person. And this guy's just, like, suffocating people to death, using all sorts of, like, nefarious little tricks and turns, and he's just, like, fucking playing people for suckers.
Yep.
It's great. And what's also really great is his love of airbending philosophy. It just seems like such a fucking double negative, like, to just watch him spout all this stuff from Avatar Lahima. Or Guru Lahima.
Guru Lahima, yeah.
Someone who, like, I wish we got flashbacks of, to be honest. Like, it might not help anything, but it would just be, like, a great something to see.
With Guru Lahima?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because yeah. I'm like, why does this guy worship this one guru so much? This guru must have been, like, the first evil airbender or something.
He was just a douchebag.
Yeah, he's just like a douchebag who's like, I can achieve weightlessness.
But this kid's got like a balloon.
He's the first guy who stole from vending machines.
So how long was Guru Lahima like floating for?
I think Zaheer said like 40 years before he died.
Did he just like piss and shit on people?
I hope so. That would explain everything. He's just like defecating and urinating all over the place.
Throwing his shit at people like a monkey.
A goddamn monkey.
Anyway.
How did he eat?
I know, it's like he had to like, well maybe he stole people's food with airbending.
Yeah.
Like a fucking asshole. Okay.
That's what I mean, like, it's like, how does this guy get by? Like, it makes no sense. And then how come he has this fucking, like, worship, this one worshiper, like, all these years later?
Yes. I will say, going on, I think one of my favorite little touches this season is I think they stepped up the fight choreography.
Oh, yeah. Sifu Kisu has always been giving them cool shit to do.
Is he the stunt coordinator?
Yeah, and they're, like, their basis. He's the guy who also, like, will pick a style to go with an element.
Well, yeah, because it's like, what is it?
Wing Chun, I believe, is airbending.
Yeah.
I know Northern Shaolin is what you would call the Fire Nation stuff.
And Tai Chi is waterbending.
Yeah.
And then I forget what earthbending is.
Earthbending, I know, is just a strong style or something like that.
Yeah, which makes sense. Because, I mean, in the last Airbender movie, where five guys do that thing and they move a little rock.
Oh my god.
Still the best fucking part of that whole movie.
That was pathetic, though.
It's my favorite fucking part.
You gotta admit that was pathetic.
Oh, it's pathetic, but that's what makes it amazing.
A fucking basic bitch move.
I need to find. There has to be a song that syncs up perfectly with their movements. And I need to find out.
I bet it's like fucking Queen or something. Do like We Love Rock and Roll.
Or no, like, it's or a, we will it rock has you. To be.
We will.
No. Like, on a scale of 1 to 11 in rock hardness, it needs to be at least a 6 or 7. Like, it needs to be at least up to Iron Maiden or higher.
Oh, my God.
Like, right. Fear of the Dark.
Dude, that would
run
be
to cool. The hills.
Fear of the Dark.
I have a phobia that someone's always there.
This is probably going to be the only time I ever reference a heavy metal band on the entire show.
But I won't stop, so thank you. So, Fabio, come thank me. Always thank me.
But anywho, yes, fight choreography. I think they definitely upped their game. It's more creative, I think. And I think having the bad guys be these benders... And all, you know, the four of them all doing a different type of bending, including airbending.
And what's even better is that, like, they're, like, the most unique benders of their element.
Yeah, because I think we said this before, what is his name? The...
Gazan.
Gazan, yeah, the lava bender.
The lava bender.
Which is, like, a weird, like...
Earth fire hybrid.
Yeah, earth fire hybrid. That's like being
that
a steam.
You think would just be under fire.
Yeah, like I always thought, like, oh, he's getting a firebender, and it's like, oh, I guess lava
he's
is rock.
Moving the fire. He's moving the earth in the fire.
Yeah, it goes on, and then Ming-Wa is cool too, and like kind of horrifying with her tentacle arms.
It's Gray Delisle, so I'm just like, oh.
And then Plea is again really cool with her. Eye of combustion.
And weirdness.
Which I gotta say, I think my favorite part of all those guys is closer to the end of the season, we have gone to Bolin and Mako have been kidnapped. And Bolin almost starts befriending them. Like these
oh,
are
yeah.
Yeah, these guys aren't just bags of dick. They are actually enjoyable human beings.
They have their own sense of camaraderie, which is why I'm kind of glad their group got named the Red Lotus, because it not only ties in with the White Lotus, it also kind of makes you feel like it's Team Dark Avatar.
Yeah, basically, like Bizarro Avatar.
Yeah.
Fucking Firebender and Airbender making out.
Yeah, it's,
and then
it's
you have
totally
Gazan's
Bizarro
great thing.
Team Avatar.
And then Gazan's reaction where he's like, really... Right Reese fucking now, guys. That's great. And Casey, you mentioned the anti-government themes, which we haven't really talked about the Red Lotus's goal, right?
Nope.
Which is...
Cause what is their goal? Because it still feels like we haven't been revealed, or everything hasn't been revealed yet.
There's still more reveals to come, but at this point we know they want to take out a number of the world's governments.
Well, they want pretty much anarchy.
Yeah.
In a way. Like, that's
why
they've
achieved by killing the oh-so-god-awful Earth Queen.
Oh my god.
Like, what a royal bitch. Like, fucking killing her father's panda and eating it.
Well, it's not a panda, it's just a bear, but...
I thought it was a panda.
No, it's a bear.
Oh.
But it's a bear nonetheless, and she fucking kills it and eats it. And I was like, my heart sank. Because
that bear was a lovely animal.
Well, because I just love how she's the antithesis of her father. Because her father was kind of like a dopey, like, kind king. Who, granted, let, like, the fucking... What's the name of the secret society of the
Dai Li?
Yeah, the Dai Li, like, run amok.
And notice how she brought them back.
Yeah. Mm. Which is cool, too. Like, I think the fact that they're doing everything mostly in Ba Sing Se is really cool, too.
Yeah,
because
it definitely feels like the original show again. It's just like I can understand why people were mad a little bit with how it didn't really leave Republic City all that much, aside from the water temples. But like, told a great story. Like, you don't
this
need
is a season
to tell a good story.
Yeah, this is the first season that gets back to a cafe road trip theme to it.
Yeah.
Even then, and this is one of my criticisms this season, when they pick a place to go, they stay there for a while. And especially in the middle of the season, it was starting to drag a little, especially when they get to, what's the metal bending city?
Zafu.
Yeah, Zafu.
Yeah, Zafu.
Like, it's not that it was bad, it's just, oh my god, I wish it would have gotten those three episodes. They could have been one episode. You could have had the A plot, B, everything with, what's the name of Chief Beifong?
Just Chief Lin Beifong. And Suyin.
Yeah, Lin okay, Beifong.
You could have had the A plot be those two and their reconciliation, and the B plot be Tenzin trying to deal with the new airbenders. There, that could have been one episode. It could have been done in 22 minutes, and you could have covered the same amount of ground.
Do you think they could have filled the stuff with, like, Korra Earth, like, learning to metal bend, and, like...
No, that's why I'd say just do one whole Zhao Yu and then one whole Northern Air.
Yeah.
But there was one whole Northern Air.
There was.
A great episode. Yeah.
And I wouldn't call it great. I think I don't think it's bad. There hasn't been a bad episode this season. But there's episodes that are definitely moving at a better pace and seem more integral than others. And I think that you didn't need an entire episode devoted to Tenzin trying to teach new airbenders. You could have done that either throughout the season or one episode as a B plot. And then you could have done everything in Zazu all in one episode.
Zafu, not Zazu. This isn't the bird from the Lion King.
This isn't your uncle from the Lion King.
I think I said Zafu there, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. In the city of Zathura.
Yes.
They are definitely...
In the city of Ziggy Stardust.
Where he played guitar.
They took it all too far, but boy, could they play guitar. And they play guitar, and they could definitely have done it in one episode or less. And you probably...
I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, I don't agree.
I don't think they should have probably done three episodes for it. But I would say they would have to at least do one full episode in...
Her area.
Zafu.
Alright, let's look at Zafu as... The episode begins, they find out that Chief Beifong has a sister, and then they find out, oh, there's bad blood between them, especially considering how they used to act. You don't necessarily need the flashback. If you want to have the flashback, just don't make it as long. That was about a third of one of the episodes. And then you show her having animosity, but Korra's learning to like her because she's learning how to metal bend through them. Then you have a little bit of Bolin having the inability to metal bend. And then have that episode end with the attack on Korra, have a little bit of a cliffhanger, and then the next episode plays about as it did in episode 7, give or take.
What about the thing with Bolin and the girl? With
an opal.
Yeah, opal.
I forgot about that, and that was sweet, but how integral is it?
I don't know. I mean,
it might be integral, dude. Like, the season's not over.
Yeah, season's not over. At this point, it seems like fat to me.
Well, she is an airbender, too. So, you have to give some time to her, since that's the whole reason they're there. I mean, if I were to trim any fat, I would say maybe the stuff with Kai. You remember Kai?
Yeah.
Because, like, it seems kind of random when he shows up. Like, I feel like the only reason he's there is to be another kid.
And I would agree with that, too. I think that there is... I think at this point we're up to, what, 10 episodes? It probably could have been 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Although I'm kind of disappointed this season's only 13.
Has every season been 13?
Yeah.
Except for the last one I thought was 20?
No, that was not 20 episodes.
No, it was it was 14 episodes, and I think it was 12 for the first season. So,
okay, it just feels weird to cap at 13.
Well, that's the standard at this point.
Well, the original standard was 20.
Yeah, well, the original standard was 22, but you have to remember, 2005 making TV was way different than 2014 making TV.
Almost all online with these fucking episodes.
Yeah, but even before that, Chris, what I'm saying is take a look at how it was. In 2005, if you got told your show's only getting 13 episodes this season, that means, oh, we don't have faith in you. We're only putting in the bare minimum amount of money that we want to put in, and you're probably not going to get your next season. Then when you look at 2014 for TV, it means, okay, we actually have faith in you, but we think that you really want to tell a story and you don't necessarily need all 22 episodes. So we're going to give you these 13 episodes and we're going to air them mostly all at once over the course of 13 weeks. And likely we will market the shit out of them. And that's what they do on AMC. That's what they do on HBO. That's it.
HBO gets 10.
Not all of them. Some of them get 8. Some of them get 13. True Blood has 13. The Leftovers getting 10. But HBO's standard was 13. That's what they debuted Oz and The Sopranos with. And that was the big thing. Oh, my God, only 13 episodes. But they're moving along so fast. And that is now happening on network shows. That's what 30 Rock got. That's what Community got. Parks and Rec is getting 13. They're realizing 13 has become the standard, and I'm so happy about that because it's so much less fat we have to deal with.
Well, I mean, it's more important with dramas than it is comedies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Community and Parks and Rec and 30 Rock.
Season 2 is, like, fucking filled with fat, but, like, I really love Season 2.
Of Community? Fucking Season 2 of Community is amazing.
Yeah,
but that's season of the show.
Yeah, I don't think there's much fat at all in that show.
Just meant, like, is the fattest amount of episodes per season.
Yeah, I mean,
actually, season one had 3 more episodes.
Yeah. But, I mean...
All right.
It's like, with a comedy, since in a lot of cases when it's pretty episodic...
Yeah.
You know, you can get away with 20-some-odd episodes as long as you're funny. When you're doing a drama, it's very hard. Like, that's why shows like 24 is like one of the rare ones because they, you know, center their gimmick around it. But something like, you know, a procedural where there isn't really a narrative overarching plot, you know, that's when the fat really comes out.
But I would say, honestly, if you want the best example, look at Lost. The first 3 seasons are all 22 episodes or more. I think the first season might be 25 or 26 hours. And then the 4th season is only 14 hours. A lot of those are 2-parters or 3-parters.
Yeah.
And if you look, which 3 seasons go by faster, the first 3 or the last 3? The answer is always going to be those last 3. Because they are getting right to the point, except for the final season, they kind of had a lot of meandering there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but if you look at, say, season 2 and even the first half of season 3, oh my god, there is so much fat. Lost season 2 is an amazing 13-episode season on television that got stretched out to 24, and oh my god, it is dull as shit.
And Jeff Loeb wrote all the dull ones.
No, I'm not going to blame Jeff Loeb. He was a creative consultant on that show. So many people got involved in that. Don't just blame Jeff Loeb.
Oh, I just blame Jeff Loeb for everything.
Yeah, and if you actually...
Israel Gaza conflict, Jeff Loeb.
Jeff Loeb's a new Hitler.
Yeah, he's the new Hitler. He's the new leader
Jeff
of ISIS.
Jeff Loeb was trying to steal the Jack Ruby.
Jeff Loeb did steal the Jack Ruby.
You know, Jeff Loeb totally broke up the Beatles, guys.
Yeah, he's worse than Yoko.
Jeff Loeb went to Paul McCartney. He's like, man, you could be doing so much with a solo career. Then he went to George and said, man, you could be doing so much with a solo career. And he went to Ringo and said, man, George could be doing so much with a solo career.
Oh, George.
And he went to Ringo and said, there's this thing called Microsoft Paint. You ought to try it sometime.
Now, Casey, you or both of you guys mentioned the online stuff. How do you guys feel about the whole, I guess, controversy about...
I mean...
I think that Nickelodeon is really bad at marketing this show.
They really are.
I'm wondering if they don't have faith in it.
Which
is weird because they keep on saying we're going to give you X amount of seasons. Like, they renew them for multiple seasons.
They have more seasons of this show than they do
Last Airbender.
Last
now.
Airbender. I mean, yeah. I think he's
not renewed for a fourth, which is probably another 13.
I think they even got they got renewed. They said they would give them a full 60 something extra episodes. So that would translate to roughly 5 seasons. Like, I wonder if they're going for the 6 seasons in a movie.
I don't know, but I know that book 4 is, like, 4 seasons with a total of 52 episodes have been ordered. That's what it says.
And I'm pretty sure that's 4 seasons. I'm pretty sure that's after season 1, because season 1 was intended to be a miniseries.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Just why it caps so much better.
Well, that's saying, I feel like they tried too hard to make a cap, and that's why I'm not so crazy about the ending of Season 1, especially compared to the ending of Season 2, and fingers crossed for the ending of Season 3.
Well, it says, The Legend of Korra was initially conceived as a 12-episode miniseries, but Nickelodeon later expanded it to 52, so I'm assuming they just added the 40 onto it. But still, 52 episodes, that's almost as long as the first show, because the first show I think was 60, right?
Yes,
something around 60 to 66.
Yeah, no, it was 20 per season.
Well, 20, it's 61 because third season of Last Airbender has 21.
Does it?
Yes.
I mean, I know they count Sozin's Comet as like one giant episode, but
well, they also separated.
I didn't think it totaled to 21.
Well, I'm looking at it right now, Chris.
Hold on.
Like, they split it up, even though it's pretty much just a movie.
Yeah.
It's
a fucking good movie.
Yeah, it's like a 4-part movie, but they split it up into 4 episodes. But, anyway. Yeah, like, for those who don't know or haven't noticed, I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone knows right now. I think it was episode 8 was the last one of Korra that was that aired on Nickelodeon. It was right before Comic-Con. And, like, immediately after that, Nickelodeon just kind of pulled the show out of nowhere and didn't really give a lot of context, if I remember correctly. And
no, they didn't. There was no explanation.
Yeah,
it was
and then
pretty bad.
I think it was Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko had to explain at the panel that they were doing the next day of what was going on. And they basically just said, Korra is moving to online only because, and it makes sense from a business standpoint, but it is frustrating, as you guys have said, how Nickelodeon's handled the show because they've moved it all around. It used to be on Saturday mornings, right? Like, book one was on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
And then they moved it to Friday nights, which, for kids, makes sense. Both time slots for kids make sense. But I think the thing is, Korra doesn't really have as big of a kid's demographic as Nickelodeon either thinks or wants to think.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, who, like, how many kids do you actually see, like, do stuff concerning Avatar, like, buy Avatar toys and...
Dude, I don't think any of them.
Well, the thing is, you also have to remember...
Since the movie.
Like, you have to remember, I don't hang out with a lot of kids. Chris is required by law to stay within 400 feet away from any kids.
Can't be within 400 feet of a Toys R Us or a Chuck E. Cheese. Wait, I can't be in a Toys R Us. It was a playground.
It's the Baby R Us.
Yeah, Babies R Us. Can't be near there.
Yeah.
Yeah, Seniors R Us. He's actually required to stay within 400 feet of that.
Seasons R Us is just a retirement home, Casey. Or like a pharmacy.
Fuck grandma's. All right.
It's like a CVS. It's like a Seniors R Us. Jesus Christ. Or a Walmart. All those greeters.
Yeah.
Those greeters. People take their kids into Walmart, so Chris isn't allowed in there either.
Oh. Why do kids have to be like, what, a third of the population or something?
All those fucking kids. They're so easy to kidnap, you guys.
The opinions of one Christopher Ryan do not reflect the opinions of Geeks at College.
And you can fit like 5 of them at once. It's great.
I'd love
to be fair. I don't want to kidnap kids, but he's right. Most of them are probably pretty easy to kidnap.
All those negligent parents.
Dude, it's just like, hey, I have an action figure collection. You want to check it out?
You've thought about this before.
No. Sad thing is, I haven't.
But it should also be said,
I am smarter than the average pedophile. It's just that.
I hope this ends up on some, like, FBI investigation.
Dude, the FBI already has all my digits.
This fucking recording, like, they turn it on. Our shitty-ass recording.
You need to name this episode Exhibit A. We'll save a bit of time.
Oh, my God.
And now Exhibit A.
The Exhibit A of the Red Lotus.
I'm gonna like, share this, like, you know how, like, Gmail now, like, will alert the authorities if you email child porn? If we, like, get send the link to this.
Are you serious?
Or something like that. Like,
I need to delete some Gmail.
Well, like, yeah, some guy was arrested because he, like, had, like, child porn and sent it over, like, Gmail or something. But it's like, if we share this recording, Chris will be arrested because he admitted to it, but... anyway,
yeah, I didn't admit to nothing except my involvement in the Kennedy assassination.
But I didn't admit to shit.
To be fair, Casey thought that he was looking for the Jack Ruby.
Jack Ruby is
the Jack Ruby's in all of our hearts.
Damn it! If Casey didn't love picking the dandelions off of that grassy knoll,
really didn't.
But
oh God, I want it. They told me that the Jack Ruby was back and to the left.
I think the thing that just blows my mind with season 3 of Korra and its airing is just how, like, Nickelodeon just so quickly just shoved it out there.
Well, Nickelodeon has a history of mishandling shows. Like, remember what they were doing with SpongeBob? It's like, hey, we have 12 episodes. That's 4 years worth of material there.
Well, but this is, like, the opposite, because...
Well, even beyond that, I was also going to bring up... I was going to bring up Invader Zim. Invader Zim had amazing ratings, actually. But the thing is, all of their ratings were not in the demographics they were looking for, so they canceled that. Same with... Do you guys remember a show called Tyena that was on Nickelodeon?
Oh, yeah. I remember Tyena. Yeah.
Tyena's actually not that...
Tyena?
It was sitcom, right?
Yeah, it was a sitcom. It was pretty standard for Nickelodeon, but it wasn't bad at all.
It was in the time of, like, SNICK.
Yeah, but it was right at the edge of SNICK and Teen Nick, and Tyena was having good ratings, but they decided they didn't want to have a show so centered around a female lead. And then, 2 years later, they had Teen Nick, which is essentially 90% female leads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where you get your Zoe 101s. That's when you get your Unfabulouses. That's where you get your Victoriouses. Victoriae? Yeah, let's go with Victoriae.
Then the Sam and Cat special.
Sam and Cat, iCarly, Drake and Josh. Josh Peck's pretty feminine.
Yeah, Josh Peck is pretty feminine now.
Yeah.
All he does is imitations of girls on Vine.
Yeah, well, Josh Peck went from kind of being Meatloaf in Fight Club to...
Being Meatloaf in Meatloaf 3, Bad Out of Hell.
Or Meatloaf in fucking Blood Rain.
Or Meatloaf in fucking Tenacious D.
Or Meatloaf in Rocky Horror.
Yes. Or just a shitty... or choosing shitty stuff to be in. But still an alumni of Nickelodeon, because he apparently is voicing... Casey Jones in the new cartoon of TMNT.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Isn't Casey Jones a female character?
No.
No.
Oh.
Casey, I should say that to you. Like,
yeah.
I feel like you're judging this based on his name. Wow, that person's name is Casey. They must be a girl.
Yeah. Wow, that's
serious.
That ginger chick Casey is a deep voice.
I've always felt that, like, Nickelodeon has really just been trying to ape the fucking Disney Channel formula, but they don't have that, like, Disney XD channel to just dump all their better cartoons on, like what Disney has now done with Gravity Falls.
Is Gravity Falls completely on Disney XD?
Not gonna work.
Is Gravity Falls completely on Disney XD?
Yeah, they just premiered the first episode on Disney Channel so that it's a smoother transition, but yeah, they've made the switch.
Yeah. Well, it's
fingers
because...
for that fucking show, man. Like, I love what they're doing now. They have fucking Nick Offerman on as a CSI agent. It's glorious.
Okay, I'll watch it.
I love Nick Offerman.
but I think part of it is because, like, there's, what is it, Teen Nick or whatever their second, and there's Nicktoons, but both of those...
Well, they used to have Nickelodeon Games and Sports for all your Figure It Out and Legends and Hidden Temple reruns, but...
Yes, because I wanted to watch Mark Summers on Double Dare.
Yeah.
I actually did watch that channel a lot because I missed Legends of the Hidden Temple so much.
Well, fuck yeah, because Legends of the Hidden Temple, but... I mean, they had channels that aren't necessarily for new content, they're for old content. I think the only exception really is Nicktoons. Like, Nicktoons has the occasional thing, like, you know...
Nicktoons has the weirdest stuff, because it shows Dragon Ball Z now.
Yeah, because they apparently got...
Nicktoons is fucking weird.
Well, because they would have stuff like,
DBZ Kai, and then they would all, they'll also show things that they apparently import from Canada, like they had Cornel and Bernie.
Yeah, stuff like that. But, like, they had Iron Man Armored Adventures, but most of the time they get just kind of stuff they acquired, like the new Yu-Gi-Oh! Show, the new Digimon show, the new, like, Dragon Ball GT, Dragon Ball Z, like you guys said.
Didn't they also have the Power Rangers Samurai and are now just, like, the Power Rangers outlet?
Well, I think that's Nickelodeon proper.
Yeah.
Oh.
Nickelodeon proper, for where you go for surprising, for Fairly Odd Parents episodes that you didn't know exist, Power Rangers and Legend of Korra sometimes, but not anymore.
Dude, I just love to think that, like, Nickelodeon is, like, the only the 90s kids will remember this channel now. Because it's really all it fucking is.
What channel is this?
The Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Like, it's really all it is now. It's just, like, everything they do is just, like, only the 90s kids will remember this. Like, the two fucking idiots behind the side characters of the Amanda Show. Drake Bell and Josh Peck, yes.
But that show premiered in the mid-2000s, and then they had a spin-off.
No, I meant them being on the Amanda Show. Or did that actually premiere in the mid-2000s?
It was like late 90s, early 2000s, probably.
I think it was like 2003.
We need to do some research.
But, I mean, there's also...
1999 to 2002.
Yeah.
Which, for the record, the Amanda Show had Moody's Point, which is kind of amazing.
Yes, yeah, Moody's Point is kind of amazing. Like,
All that shit that they have on Nickelodeon is just, like, stuff that evolved from the 90s, like, all that and shit like that.
But things they don't have that anymore. If they were going more for nostalgia, I feel like there would be less Sam and Cats or Victorious or stuff like that. This is, at this point...
I just really meant, like, the formulas they had from the 90s.
Well, like, because in terms of actual 90s stuff, they have that segment on Teen Nick, which is the 90s were all that. Where I think most nights from, like, whatever, like, 8 p.m. to frickin' 6 in the morning, they play 90s Nicktoons.
Yeah.
Like, Hey Arnold, Rugrats, CatDog, Invader Zim, whatever you think, you know.
Yeah, if anything, I would argue that in the early 2000s, Drake and Josh was them kind of trying to do Keenan and Kel again or something like that.
Well, yeah. But it's, like, switched, like, kind of, like, they're... Chemistry is switched.
Yeah. Well, it's them trying to do a show, but it became... I cannot believe we're getting this deep into Drake and Josh. It did become its own thing, and I actually... I dig that show.
We are deep into both Drake and Josh.
It's funny, because Isn't Drake Bell in jail?
I don't fucking know.
All I know is that Justin Bieber...
Wait, no, he was in the Fairly Odd Parents. That was the jail sentence, being the one.
That's worse than jail.
That was his plea bargain.
Yes.
Okay, you can either go to Camp Greenlight from Holes, jail, or the Fairly Odd Parents movie. In retrospect, he wishes he chose Camp Greenlight.
But back to Korra, it's funny...
Oh my god, I also forgot he's the fucking Spider-Man.
He was? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He voices Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's also his jail sentence. He has to voice him on Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But back to Korra. It's like, what was it, like a week and a half that they announced that Korra was coming back before it aired?
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah, because
apparently, I like to think that the people in the marketing room at Nickelodeon came up with the idea while they were watching The Ring, and they just said, 7 days. That's it.
He gets. Well, like, I remember around the time of book two, I think, ending, they were like, oh, yeah, season three's in the process of being made. And it's like, well, I figured as much. I didn't expect it to be, released, fucking 7 months later. They had to fucking start making that show really early.
Yeah.
Actually, in my headcanon, they announced that it was coming out in a week and a half. Said, okay, you have a week and a half to make your show, guys.
And it looks better than season two. Somehow. I guess, pressure is really, the best thing for these guys.
Pressure is the best motivation.
Well, I think season three is also more consistent in animation because you don't have to jump back and forth between
studios. Yeah, the styles are no longer jumping,
Well, that was one of the things that was criticized with season two, and it's one I could actually agree with, as opposed to the more hyperbolic shit. Where someone pointed out, that characters don't blink in season two. And, it doesn't bug me, really, but it's something I will notice now. And then, watching this season, it's like, oh, they actually blink. That's good. Because I think they're not jumping from studio to studio. Studio Pierrot did, a bunch, and then Studio Mur did a bunch. And it would flip-flop, and I think Studio Mur finished off the season, and then Studio Mur is doing all of season three, which is great. So, let's see. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about? Where I guess we're left off, where we leave off is basically Zaheer and his gang taking over Bossize.
Killing the Earth Queen.
Killing the Earth Queen.
In the most brutal fashion, which I was good.
Yeah.
I'd not like that woman's.
But I like how they're using the secondary characters better this season. We don't have the romantic stuff going on anymore.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that shit kind of calmed down.
Yeah, and I like how I feel like Bolin has more to do, even though I loved his subplot in season two.
Of him being a mover?
Oh, a mover star.
Mover star.
What was it? What was his name? Do you remember his name in that?
Oh, God.
Nuk-tuk.
Nuk-tuk, yes. The Nuk-tuk's...
With Ginger.
Yeah, the Nuk-tuk subplot was fucking awesome, even though it kind of... it felt unrelated, but it was, its great own thing. Same with... what's the name of the businessman guy?
Varric?
Yeah, Varric. I like when Varric comes back, too.
Yeah. Oh, he's... Well, that's the thing. I really love the way they're using him in this. Because the thing is, this season has a lot of great set pieces, and he introduced one of them where he's talking about, what you could do? And he said, and what was it like? You could, he probably just went there and framed a bunch of evidence. He's like, didn't you do that to us? Yeah, that's why I know it's such a great idea. It worked on you.
Yeah. Varric's fucking awesome.
My other favorite, new reintroduction is fucking old Zuko.
Old Zuko is pretty cool, and he's fucking dragon.
Down to that, I was just
so she has the power to combust from her mind. I hired a guy once to try and kill the Avatar. Turns out it didn't work as well as I thought it would. And Aubrey Plaza's character is that's okay. I tried to kill Korra once.
Everyone fucking kills the Avatar in this season. Everyone has either previously tried to or is trying to kill the Avatar.
And what they've said about Toph, I kind of want to see her come back.
Yeah, because she's still alive, right?
Yeah, she's just wandering for enlightenment, so she must be stoned all the time.
I don't know what.
No, she's not dead. She's searching for enlightenment.
Yeah, Sun Yin mentions that. One point when I think it's when they enter Zaofu and they pass that big statue of Toph. I think Bolin, because Toph is one of his idols, and I get to meet Toph, the great Toph, and she's like, oh no, she's on a pilgrimage for enlightenment. So there's this 80 fucking year old or however old Toph wandering about,
totally whacked out of her skull.
So are we gonna find out that everybody on Team Avatar is still alive except for Aang?
Maybe. Dude.
Well, I know Sokka's dead.
Yeah, Sokka's dead.
Which makes sense because he's
helping
older.
Them even at his old age because everyone knows how arrogant Sokka is.
Yeah, because I wonder. I wish we would hear something about the Kyoshi Warriors, though.
I wish we would hear more about Sokka. I'm curious what Sokka was doing. I know, obviously, he did some police chief and law enforcement stuff.
No, he was the head of the Republic City Council before they had a president.
Yeah. And also, the theater that blew up in season 2 was named after him.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And had a statue of him, so there you go.
Interesting trivia on Henry Rollins as Zaheer. He took this role very seriously from the beginning. Before he had even recorded his audition, he conducted an in-depth phone interview with Mike and Brian about his character's background, motivations, and other things while he was on a spoken word tour.
Nice.
Yeah, I love Henry Rollins.
Yeah, because Henry Rollins takes shit seriously, man.
He really does.
I mean, have you seen West of Memphis?
Oh, wait, is that the documentary or the movie?
Yeah, it's a documentary into West Memphis 3. No, it's not Devil's Not. Oh my god, I hate that movie.
Wait, why do you hate that movie? I'm still kind
of curious. I'll tell you about Devil's Not some other time.
Save it for later, kids.
No, because honestly, if we do a worst of the year, Devil's Not's the worst true crime movie I've ever seen. I loathe that movie with a passion. Wow.
I might still try to go out and see City of God, and we can match Indie Blow for Indie Blow. But, not City of God, Child of God, the new James Franco movie.
But Henry Rollins shows up in West of Memphis, and he's essentially threatening to punch the entire state of Arkansas.
Wow, that's great. So is he just like the best part?
Well, no, it's... Like, West of Memphis is a legitimately great documentary. West of Memphis is a documentary, and it's really well done. You can tell
the movie.
Devil's Not's the movie, and if you took a drink every single time Reese Witherspoon stares out the window, you see a ghost of her dead kid riding a bike in slow motion, waving to her.
Oh, it's one of those movies.
That happens 4 times in that movie.
Jeez.
Sounds so like Lifetime.
Dude, that's the thing. I got 90 minutes into the movie and my dad was walking by and she was like, "Dad, I think this might secretly be a Lifetime movie in disguise."
Or not secretly. But
Anna, you haven't seen the slow zoom in on Reese Witherspoon while she talks about the events of the trial and wonders maybe if perhaps they got the wrong people.
I don't know. I don't fucking know, though. We don't know. But anyway, as I was saying, supporting characters, I'm loving what they're like, that Bolin and Mako have more to do. I like how Asami has more to do. And
oh my god, I'm loving her dynamic with Korra this season.
I know, it's like these like awesome like girlfriends going on adventures together and stopping a coup.
And making fun of Mako being...
I like that Bolin... I like that Bolin and Asami actually had some bonding time when they were playing not Chinese checkers.
Taisho.
Okay, let's call it China chess.
I think I remember I was on Nick.com and I was watching a trailer for... It was from the Comic-Con, I think, trailer for episode 9, because this is the stakeout. This is, you know, the week before it aired. And there's this great bit where it's, like, trying to build up, like, suspense. And it's like, you know, it's the narrator guy, the radio narrator. And he's like, Bolin and Asami play an intense game of Pai Show. And it's, like, literally, like, that entire scene where they don't, like, say anything. And just play for like 20 seconds.
Music starts playing.
What's that?
Fucking ragtime music starts playing.
I don't know if there's even ragtime music. It might be like silent.
What, during the Pai Show games?
In the trailer.
Oh, in the episode, it's just like ragtime music the whole way through.
Yeah, I don't remember, but it was like, I remember it being like hilarious. Yeah. But yeah, I'm loving, I feel like they're finally like hit their stride with these characters and like, kind of realize that they don't need to do, you know, the romantic stuff with it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really digging that. And I think the end of season 2, I really loved, I legitimately loved Cora and Mako's second breakup because it's everything that it's showing the maturity between the characters. It's showing that they can just handle this like adults. And I loved that scene. And they're not going to fall back and just go, eh, just kidding. They're getting back together. They're sticking with that at this point.
Because it's so unnecessary. You know, like, I mean, it was, like, an interesting venue in the first season. But, like, season two, it really didn't have a place. So yeah. You had this kind of, like, D-plot where there's, like, Ripple, like, there's a rocky relationship between Mako and Cora, and it's kind of like, why? Okay.
Well, I think that it does have its place, and that's why in season four episodes in, there's a really brutal, really immature breakup, and then in the end of season of the final episode, there's a really, really, there's a really mature breakup there where they just.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Fair enough. But, I guess
character growth.
Yeah, I guess they realized, oh, we can show character growth and get rid of this, kill two birds with one stone. And they did it, so. Good job! Also, I think we should mention how, I think season three seems to be written mostly not by DiMartino and Konietzko.
Well, if it's written by any of them, it's always Mike and not Brian.
Really?
Yeah.
Because a lot of them have been, like, Tim Hedrick, and I don't recognize his name as much.
I think Mike, whatever his last name is, has actually been doing a lot of the writing on it.
DiMartino?
Yeah, now, yeah.
He's done and two now episodes. And
Green Lantern's all dead. We got Joaquin Dos Santos back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because did he do any, has he directed any individually, or is he, like,
working on? I don't think he's directed, but I know I've seen his name in the credits.
Yeah.
Pop up, so
well, he's one of like the fucking best involved. Animation directors, period.
Yeah,
from his work on Justice League to previous Avatar series to now,
and even Green Lantern. I thought he did really great with that, and I just wish Cartoon Network gave that shit more of a shot instead of fucking Teen Titans Go.
I actually don't mind Teen Titans Go.
Me neither.
I wouldn't either. It's just like if it wasn't something that was already pre-existing and already really good.
Well, the thing is, those are very, very, very different shows. And I mentioned this on Facebook at one point in the last few weeks. Yeah. It's like comparing the Justice League to the Looney Tunes, where their tones are so radically different and their goals are so radically different that I can't even reconcile them. They are The only real common thing is the characters, but they're doing something so far off from each other that I can't even begin to actually draw comparisons.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be a humorous show, so I don't understand necessarily a lot of the anger towards the show. When it's like, I understand that people want a continuation of Teen Titans.
Yeah, that's really
especially since where Teen Titans left off, what's kind of
it was a really. I mean, granted, we had the TV movie, but it didn't answer any of the questions. But
yeah, well, there were a lot of cliffhangers, and I was really appreciating where things are going. Like Things Change is an amazing season finale, but it's a really bad season.
Yeah, I think. Wait, but
is
I think
that the one where they all end and it's like all put together and piling on the villains, or is it the
no,
one?
No, that's when it's the one where Tara comes back.
Yeah, all right, that's what I thought it was.
Which yeah. Tara's my favorite character in Teen Titans, so I was really like, oh my god, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And that's just kind of
yeah, it just goes kind of nowhere, which is like
yeah, well, it has a really cool theme. It has. You see Beast Boy doing a lot of growing up, which is something they were doing that entire season. I cannot believe we are on to Teen Titans season 5 on this, but that's yeah, but there's all that. And so that really works for a season arc, but if that's the last note of your show, then no, you missed the mark somewhere along the line.
Yeah, because the other episode they had that was, you know, resolving all that shit with, was it Brother Blood?
It was the Brotherhood of Evil and Brother Blood, yeah.
Yeah, that was a much better series finale. That ended kind of the same way that that one episode of Justice League Unlimited did.
Pretty much, yeah. It's very much like all the characters come together. It's kind of like that, like Batman Brave and the Bold, where they like bring everyone back. I love the finale of Batman Brave and the Bold, where they like break
the one where Batmite comes in and, like, introduces the Beware the Batman, basically.
I don't even know about that. I just know that it ends that breaking... Silly. It ends breaking the fourth wall. Like, everyone, like, has an after party on a set.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awesome. I love that show. I cannot describe how much I love Batman Brave and the Bold, because that show is so fucking good.
Yeah, because I feel like that show got the shaft, because that came out the same year as The Dark Knight. But the thing is, The Dark Knight is arguably, up until that point, the darkest non-comic interpretation of Batman thus far.
Yeah.
And wait, what was then, darker than The Dark Knight?
Nothing.
That wasn't a comic?
Or...
That's what I'm saying.
He's saying that is the darkest that wasn't a comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's... Up until that point, that was the darkest thing anyone had shown the mainstream public with Batman. And then your follow-up, the show that's premiering 6 months later with Batman, is closer to the Adam West show. And it's not bad by any means. It's just, it was the right show in the wrong time that could make all the difference.
But it still lasted 65 episodes.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, it had a good run.
Dude, it had a pretty good run for an animated show. It's just that, I mean, there's episodes of... that show, Brave and the Bold, that are genuinely, like, there's an episode that deals with, was it Joe Chill? Who is, in a lot of continuity, the guy who killed Bruce Wayne's parents.
Yeah, like, he's only not the guy who kills Bruce Wayne's parents in the Tim Burton Batman.
Yep. So, yeah. And it's a great episode where it's, like, it's not even really a team-up, I don't think. Or, no, it's with the Spectre. So, it's, like, more of a Batman-centric episode, because, you know, the gimmick of Batman Brave and the Bold is that he teams up with someone for the main episode, and that's great, too, because you have Plastic Man and The Question and Blue Beetle, both Blue Beetles.
It introduces a lot of little kids to characters who they would probably never know.
Like fucking Buona Beast.
Yeah, I love... Dude, Brooklyn fucking Buona Beast.
Yeah, and Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if I had to choose, and I know this is a very unpopular opinion, but I prefer that show to Young Justice. I prefer Teen Titans to Young Justice.
Yeah.
I just find Young Justice kind of, I don't know, I almost feel like it takes itself too seriously.
Well, yeah, it's kind of the point. It's like kids in Black Ops situations, like...
Yeah, but it doesn't...
It's kind of hard not to be totally serious.
But with a concept like that, it's also really, really easy to just go, you know, guys, it's kind of silly. We don't need to be completely dour all the time.
I don't know. I like that show a lot better.
You know, I've seen maybe an episode. Or maybe
taste two. Is subjective.
Anyway, Korra.
Korra, it's fun.
It's. Would you say this is your favorite season so far, or no?
Season 3
probably
of last year.
In the long run, I want to...
But
no, I'm talking about just Korra.
Oh.
I wanna look on the season as a whole. Ask me in 3 weeks.
Yeah, agree.
I'm not going to.
No, Taylor, I'm asking you. I need you to ask me that question.
Otherwise, you'll Marty McFly out of here and fade into existence.
Or he'll spontaneously combust like Kenny in that one episode of South Park.
Taylor, ask me. I'm fading into the mist of time.
But it hasn't been 3 weeks, Casey. No.
Oh, no.
So, yes. We have the last 3 episodes, which sound very exciting. I think, you know... Taking into consideration what Casey said about the pacing in the Zhao Fu segment, I think this season has really good pacing. I think having the villains pretty much in every episode, or almost every episode, they feel more as a threat, especially when there's more interaction.
Yeah, there's a sense of immediacy there. The villains are really well written.
Yeah.
You mean urgency?
Yeah, urgent. Well, urgency and immediacy. Those words are both words that you could accurately use here.
Like synonyms.
Or, hold on, I need to get my thesaurus. I love that we can say that word now.
Yes.
Thesaurus!
or cinnamon, anyway.
Thesaurus is my favorite.
Or Satischelli.
But I agree. I think the villains are awesome. I like their motivation. I like how they don't see themselves as just bad guys. Like, honestly, that was probably my least favorite thing about Last Airbender was Ozai.
Yeah, well, the Fire Nation were just kind of... They were like Nazis. They were just kind of evil.
Well, it's like the thing is, like, Fire Lord Ozai is kind of touted as the bad guy of the show, when he isn't really. He's more like just the final boss in a series of, like, kind of better villains like Azula and Zuko.
Do you think Zhao was better than Ozai?
What, Zhao?
Yeah.
I know Zhao had a lot more going on than Ozai.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I loved it. The first moment of The Last Airbender that I love comes in episode 2 with the Agni Kai between Zuko and Zhao. Because that scene is pretty goddamn amazing.
I don't know. I wouldn't say I would say Zhao is better, but I would say Zuko and Azula are.
Well, yeah, it's because you get more development time out of the two of them.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I like them more, because I don't think Ozai is as developed of a villain as he probably should have been.
But it's still Mark Hamill, so you're still like, ugh.
Well, yeah, but I mean...
Mark Hamill.
So you're saying that because the actor is better, therefore the entire villain is better?
No, I'm just saying I can't really call him, like, the worst villain on that show.
Well, I'm not saying he's the worst villain. I'm saying he's very disappointing.
Or disappointing. It's like, it's fucking Mark Hamill.
Dude,
he's not phoning it in.
I'm not saying he's phoning it in. I'm saying he's not written that well, dude. It has nothing to do with the acting of it. I'm saying he doesn't have much meat to him.
Yeah.
Okay, it's nothing against Mark Hamill, even though I would say I want more of Mark Hamill.
You know? Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like they kind of didn't use him as much as they probably should have.
Mark Hamill's on Gravity Falls, kinda.
I thought Ron Perlman played Ozai.
No.
They're on Perlman.
When I feel like Mark Hamill has more, like, lines in the first half of the first season of regular show than he does in fucking Avatar
Last Airbender.
Pretty much. It feels like that.
Yeah, that's an accurate assessment.
But I'm not saying that the performance is bad. I'm just saying he isn't given that much material, and I wish he was.
Because that's what you fall into when you're the Emperor Palpatine of the show.
But see, it's like...
Which is funny because it's fucking Mark Hamill.
Well, and it's also like, you bring up Roku and Sozin, right? And how there's development there.
And it just took one episode.
Yeah. And it's like...
nuts.
Like, we understand the motivations of both of those guys. But, like, Ozai is just kind of, like, evil for evil's sake. Like, it's like, oh, my dad was kind of evil, but not really. So I'm going to be evil.
No, there's very much a "I'm the bad guy."
Yeah, like Azula.
I love the way actually you described it to her. He doesn't feel more like the head villain of the series. He feels more like the final boss of a video game.
Like Azula's kind of the main bad guy of that show. It's just that, you know, you can't have Aang fight Azula as the final bad guy. It would be kind of weird, but you know, whatever.
Although I do love their final fight, Azula and Zuko's.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that fight is fucking fantastic. And, you know, not that the final fight between Aang and Ozai isn't awesome, too. It's just...
There's just less emotional weight.
There's less emotional weight to it, yes. Almost all of it comes from Aang. So, you just know it's like, oh, Aang just has to beat this guy, and then he wins.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Aang just needs a Konami code, and then he's good to go.
But, like, that's what I like about Korra, is that, you know, each villain is developed more, and they have a much more clear motivation. You know, Amon, I forget her uncle's name, and now Zaheer and his guys. And I like how Zaheer has a goal, and he feels like that goal is... like, the right thing to do. Which is kind of always the best thing about a good villain. That the villain should think that he's right. You know?
I love one of his first lines, is that, like, gaining this airbending shows me that this path is truly a righteous one. Like, he's not out there to just kill people. He's just out there to
prove his point.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, he has a very strong belief in how things should be run, and that clashes with every single person he's going to come across, but he's not going to back down. It's very much a Shades of Grey. And you've been getting a lot more of that in Legend of Korra than you got in Last Airbender, because there's not, like, one standing army you have to face. Because Among, he actually had a bunch of beliefs. He wasn't just out there to kill people. Korra's uncle was a little more closer to the just a flat-out villain, but you had the family aspect, which made it a little more Shades of Grey.
As well as now you find out that Unalaq's kind of tied into all this.
Yeah, which I'm curious how that's going to tie in.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Because it's probably going to lead to something horrific.
Yep.
I'm expecting some deaths.
Deaths.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking forward to these last three episodes. I think they're going to be great.
Agreed. So, I guess
we'll just... Is the trailer out for the 11th
episode? I don't know. I haven't checked. But hopefully... You listeners out there are as excited as we are for the final three. What?
Have you seen this photo of the Guardians of the Galaxy stand-in doubles that's been floating around? Some genius just posted that fucking still from Spaceballs and then just said, "You idiots, you've captured their stunt doubles." It's late.
Yes, it is late. Anyway.
I have the giggle fizz.
On that note, we will report...
Keep slacking off this summer, guys, kids.
We'll cover Korra's finale, the last three episodes, in one bit. We'll do that.
I hope so.
We'll do that. So, anyway, thanks for listening, and we will end this as we end most episodes. Keep studying.
Keep slacking off this summer.
Keep slacking off, studying, whatever.
Lee Harvey Oswald was after the Jack Ruby.
Keep jacking off.
Keep jacking off.